Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Folks, welcome back to another episode of the Hurricane Age Show, where we share a light on the people, the purpose, and the passion behind today's most inspiring journeys. And today's guest is someone who spent over 30 years in the field of nursing with a heart for hospice and end-of-life care. But when she lost her own mother, also a nurse, something inside shifted. And she turned that revelation into a mission. Now she's a self-care advocate, speaker, the author of the powerful book, Self-Care Isn't Selfish, The Compassionate Nurse's Step-by-Step Guide to Stress Relief. So she's also the creator of The Becoming Method, helping nurses and caregivers break the burnout cycle and rediscover their own well-being. With me, Jenny Lytle.
Hello. Thank you so much. That was a great intro. Thank you.
I try. Well, Jenny, it is a true honor and pleasure. And your story, I mean, I was reading about, you know, the whole thing and just in the brief intro, it sounded that there was a lot of stuff. And you, first of all, I want to just say thank you for the work you do. I mean, I know you've heard quite a bit during the pandemic as a nurse, you know, and then it turned out a little chaotic after that because, you know, from hero, then it became a problem with people with vaccines and stuff. You know, it's just a sad story there. But the work you guys do are phenomenal. And so I just want to thank you. And again, someone who had, you know, a father who was terminal and was taken care of by nurses, someone who has a mother that is aged and therefore sometimes she needs the work. I admired the work you do as nurses. And by the way, that's every nurse out there, you know, in the world. I mean, I just, you know, want to thank you for the work you do there. And especially Jenny, I mean, you have taken it to the next level to help more of those folks, you know, cope with life. So before we go any further, let's talk about your journey. I mean, what got you into nursing first? I mean, that's always intriguing. I mean, you were a nurse, your mom was a nurse. Is that what inspired you or how did that work?
No, and first of all, thank you. And thank you, and you're welcome for your kind words about nursing and about me. First of all, it's mind-boggling to me that I've been a nurse for 30 years. Actually almost 31 now, 31 this month, but because I feel like I'm not much older than 30, and actually I'm getting ready to be 50. So it's time flies, you know, and I know that people always said that when I was young, you know, oh, wait till you get older, you know, and I thought, okay, whatever. It's so true. But my nursing, my desire to be a nurse, that started when I was young. I had a lot of kind of immune issues when I was, you know, 3, 4, 5, somewhere in there, maybe younger. And so I was in the hospital some. I just had recurrent pneumonia and things like that. And all of that ended up resolving itself. But I don't remember very many things from that time. But what I do remember was the cool thermometers that the nurses had. They're so similar to the ones, you know, they use now in a lot of places where it's, you know, still the kind of holster kind and, you know, they stay. And I thought that was so cool. And so that kind of sparked the desire to be a nurse. And then as I, you know, got older, I still kind of hung on to that, but I also wanted to do something more with mental health, like, you know, social work or psychology or one of those type things. But I ended up deciding to go to nursing school. I went to practical nursing school first because it was a 1-year program. And honestly, my mom wanted me to finish college before I got married, and I was going to marry a guy that thankfully I didn't marry because it was an awful situation. But my mom and I actually went to nursing school together. Yes. So we graduated twice together. She was pregnant with me when she graduated from high school. So, and then we graduated from nursing school together because she had been a single mom and she had always wanted to be a nurse, but she was busy working, you know, 2 and 3 jobs. And so, yeah, so we went to school together right after I graduated from high school. And so that was something that I'm really glad we were able to do.
Ooh, what a story. I mean, first of all, I would have never thought that that's what, you know, was the driver behind you being
right.
That's a cool thing. I mean, it was the thermometer, right? I mean,
like, right, hello. The thermometer, and then I wanted to graduate quickly. Right. So, you know, it wasn't like a really heartfelt thing, but there are so many things that I love about nursing and especially hospice nursing. And that is heartfelt for me.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, it is funny. You said, like, you know, I've been doing this for 30, 31, you know, years this year, and, like, you know, time flies. I mean, we say the expression time flies, we're having fun. And, you know, if you weren't doing what you really loved, you wouldn't be, you know, actually enjoying it still today and doing the work you do. And so that's always a terrific thing to share with our audiences. I like to always highlight that. The idea, again, it comes over and over in all discussions. People who are enjoying their life and whatever they do are the people who really love what they do in the first place, and they have a passion that goes with that. If not, you will be miserable 30 years doing something that you're not going to be loving, is not going to be a fun, you know, you probably wouldn't have made it 30 years anyways, but it is something intriguing when you hear someone go into a field that they enjoy. And then, of course, I mean, nursing is a very wild and wide, you know, place, right? There's so many options. There's so many ways you can. So just, you know, I mean, I'm not sure what state you are, but I actually I worked in one of the largest nursing companies in the States, the VNS. Venus and Y, you know, now they call them Venus Health. This was one of the largest, like, home nursing agencies, like visiting nurses, basically. Yep. And we had over 10,000 nurses, you know, that were, you know, on the, I guess, the payroll. And we were the insurance, you know, department, you know, so we worked together, and especially we were doing long-term care. So we work with hospice. We work with, you know, the long-term care nurses, the enrollment nurses, and the care, you know, managers and all the stuff. So in our world, there's always nursing in at least in my field, because health plans too. I mean, insurance carriers, they have a full medical team, including medical doctors and nurses on board. So it's, you know, I have a very tight relationship with the nursing world, and I understand them, you know, well. And I have to say, I've seen it. This is, again, through genuine, you know, just I guess an expression or whatever, an observation that I've had, you know, is that they really care. And then that's the thing, like people don't realize that this is not something they do because they just gonna get paid. Yes, nursing pays well, not as well as it could. I mean, I think
I think
there's room for improvement there, but you know, it is one of the, you know, maybe, I mean, obviously the higher you go, the more experience you, I mean, there's just different levels. You can go to the corporate world that can, as I mentioned, the world that I'm in, I mean, there are nurses that are like in they have their degrees, the PhDs now, and they're, you know, VP level and up in whatever the departments they're in, and they do well. And again, you know, field nurses, NPs, I mean, there's all kind of, you know, levels, and they're all good, and they all come with satisfaction. I actually, true story again, in Sandy, the hurricane that hit, you know, Jersey, New York, 2012, I believe, we had, I mean, it was just a disaster, as you know, and we were one of the first responder, I guess, groups in that time in New York. And we had hundreds of nurses literally mobilized, you know, in areas that were hit before even FEMA. I mean, this is true, before FEMA hit, you know, that the location, we were already there. And so we as the insurance, we obviously, there's nothing to do with our work at that point. So we all kind of became their transportation and logistics. So we basically work with them, making sure that they go in safe and in and out of the neighborhoods and the store, you know, whatever, you know, they needed the help, and especially the elderly, the buildings, there were no lights, you know, no electricity. I mean, it was nature. Seeing them at, in the work that they did and how they did it, it's just amazing. So again, you know, it's just something I'm always pleased to talk about this, because it's, again, I'm a fan.
Right. Well, I can tell, and I love that. I love your passion about, you know, you describing all of that. That sounds like something that was an incredible experience.
It was. And, you know, again, like I said, I mean, I have to say this, I mean, no offense, you know, to my lovely doctors, and I love doctors, but, you know, doctors do a great job, but, you know, they don't carry the load, you know, on a regular basis at hospital and all the stuff. I mean, nurses do most of the work, you know, that is the ongoing work. I mean, doctors come in, they do the stuff, great, they diagnose, they work, they know what to do. Mm-hmm. But the nurses are the ones who carry that work. And, you know, I've seen some terrific ones out there that actually, especially even with my mom's care, you know, they take care of her, they really treat her well. And, you know, I have to give them credit also in terms of patients, because, you know, people, you know, when they're sick, they're not the best, you know, mood.
Absolutely.
And they do this stuff. So it's just another, you know, add, you know, bonus here, if you want to call it that way. But so now you, I love the idea that you graduate twice with your mom. That was funny. Well, one you were not aware of, the other one you were
exactly,
you were planning with. And but that was an experience too, right? I mean, but right. Now that leads me to the question. I mean, here's your mom, you graduate, you start doing the work, and then your mom gets ill eventually. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's now you care for her. Was there anything that you were able to do to assist? I mean, how did that work? I mean, again, I don't want to bring bad, you know, memories but if it's something you share, because I think it does impact, you know, the work you do. It does impact how you felt, and it really is something that other in the same field or any other field will experience if they have something like that. Because I can tell you, when my mom is sick, it does take a toll on me. I mean, personally, because, mm-hmm. you know, it affects my work, it affects my schedule, it affects everything, right? And it does give you a level of burnout, right? I mean, so we're going to discuss that in a minute. So let's talk about that experience. I mean, the good, the bad, and the ugly, if you want to call it that
way. Sure. So, yeah. So we both worked, actually right after school, we both went to the same long-term care facility and worked there. We worked on two opposite ends and on different shifts, but we did work at the same place for a while. And she worked in nursing for quite a few years, but then ended up getting on at Delco, which was the GM factory here in town. And so she retired from nursing to do that because the benefits were great and it worked out really well. But she ended up moving in next door to my husband and I. And so she was a big part of helping out with the kids and things like that, you know, after school and everything. And so she was definitely very involved in our day-to-day lives. I'm her only child, and she wasn't married. I mean, she had been, but she'd been divorced for years. And so it was really just, you know, her and us. And that was something that worked out well. But she had some chronic illnesses. I mean, she had depression and anxiety. She had multiple sclerosis, which she had been diagnosed with in 1980 originally. And then it was when her mom was dying. And that was when my mom was, so in 80, she was 23. And I was just little. But they ended up saying, well, you know what, it's things kind of reversed once my grandma had passed away. And so they're like, you know, it wasn't, it probably wasn't that, it was just a psychosomatic kind of thing. But years later, when she was re-diagnosed, then a lot of the things that had happened, you know, in between that time made more sense. And overall, you know, in terms of having MS for that long, she was in pretty good shape, like physically, but she definitely had a lot of, you know, she had a lot of just pain and, you know, chronic things from that. And she'd been on disability for a while. And she also had a an aneurysm in the middle of her brain. And we had known about that for a while. And at first, she wasn't sure if she wanted to do anything about it because it was, you know, the surgery itself was kind of risky because it was right in the middle. And but then she had decided, OK, yes, this is something that I want to do. But she wanted to wait until everything else was taken care of. You know, she was always worried about everybody else, and she had these things that she wanted to do and these things that she wanted to do. And so she ended up basically just running out of time. And that ruptured one day, and I was going to be taking her to the dentist that morning. And so, you know, she lived next door and she was always running late. And so I, you know, I was irritated because she wasn't ready. And I went over to, you know, say, hey, come on. And I knocked on the door and I opened the door and I was like, hey, and it was just silent. And, yeah, I found her. She was still in the bathroom, and, she ended up passing away about 12 hours later. But in between all of that time, you know, we had, our relationship had definitely changed. She, just as her mental health deteriorated and her physical health deteriorated, she became a hoarder. And she, there was, I was frustrated because there were so many things that I felt like she could be doing for herself that she wasn't doing, you know, things that would have made her life better. And, you know, in hindsight, I realized just how incredibly lonely she was and how she really didn't see those things as real options. And so
at KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
So it was tough then on me, you know, because I would just, I would get frustrated with her. But at the same time, of course, I loved her and, you know, and she had sacrificed so much for me. And so I felt selfish about things. But then she, you know, in hindsight, that's definitely been some stuff that I've had to work through. And that's part of why I'm so passionate about the point that self-care isn't selfish. You know, my mom was somebody who would have taken care of anybody but herself. And, you know, and now because of her never getting around to doing the things she needed to do for herself, you know, I'm without my mom. And, you know, and I know, I mean, the reality is we're all going to die, but I believe that her life could have been a lot better. Our relationship could have been a lot better had we both done some things differently.
Well, thank you for sharing. I mean, that's pretty personal, but I mean, it is heartfelt. I mean, you know, people can really understand, you know, the frustration, the difficulty of it. I mean, and anyone who has parents and, you know, who have been through a process where someone is ill, I mean, they'll probably understand how it is. But again, MS is no small, you know, thing. I mean, it's a huge, and it does, absolutely, you know, affect big time, and depends on what level. And some people get in worse than others, I guess. And yeah, it is a it's a bad diagnosis when you think about it that way. Even when it happens, I mean, yeah, it's, you got to adjust a lot of things. And, you know, again, there's age, there's that, there's a lot of things. And again, people sometimes we can never be in somebody's head, right? I mean, it's how they do it. Maybe they get busy with things to kind of forget things. And, you know, and I love what you said, the idea that, you know, people will take care of others, but they forget themselves. And that's you know, now it's going to sound cliche because we repeat this, you know, you hear this all the time, but, you know, the airplane and the mask, right? You know, put your mask
absolutely
first.
Yep.
You know, but that's not what happens in real life. The adverse person does not do the mask first and then start, you know, giving help. They kind of tend to want to help others. Although, again, we think that we're selfish, but, you know, by default, but we're not. I mean, like, number one, but people tend to sometimes forget that, and especially in work, right? Mm-hmm. At work, I mean, we're just busy and do stuff and we take care of everybody and then we stressed out and go home and we don't take care of ourselves or our, you know, loved ones. And sometimes you disconnect. Sometimes, you know, you have a bad relationship that can be affected. There's a lot of stuff. So let's, well, first of all, before I get to the burnout and the work, you know, is that the moment you actually went into like the hospice world and the palliative and, you know, end of life, you know, work, or was it before?
No, that was before that. So I started in hospice and end of life care when I was, well, I technically started in 2005. Well, really, I started in 2005. So October of 2005 is when I started my first hospice position. But my my close friend earlier in the summer that year, her dad had lung cancer and he was going through treatment and stuff. And, you know, there wasn't any real talk of it not being curable at that point. But he woke up one morning and realized that his abdomen was all purple, and he went to the ER. He was having a lot of pain, went to the ER, and they told him that his lung cancer had metastasized to his liver, and they sent him home with 2 weeks to live and with hospice. And they were a pretty non-medical family, and so I spent most of those 2 weeks there with them, and that was really my introduction to hospice. Like, I knew of hospice, but I didn't really understand exactly what it was. I thought that it was all about cancer. It's not, even though in this particular situation it was, but, you know, it's actually for anybody who is experiencing a, you know, a terminal diagnosis or a terminal prognosis. And I also thought that it was like a place, you know, a place that you went,
center,
you know,
yeah,
we're going to go to hospice. Yeah. So having that there at the house, oh, and I also thought that it was like, you know, for people who were like really, really dying, like today or tomorrow kind of dying. And, again, incorrect, 6 months or less is the prognosis. So I was there and I thought, this is such a cool thing. You know, I mean, he was dying of lung cancer and he still smoked, and why not? I mean, it's not gonna, you know, it's not gonna change things if you quit. And so he was able to go out on his porch and smoke with his friends and, you know, be there at home where he wanted to be, and everybody could come and see him and stay with him, and he could eat what he wanted and do what he wanted. And it was just, it was such a change from, you know, what I was used to seeing with people who are dying, you know, either being in the hospital or being in a nursing home and everything being, you know, just like super gloom and doom. And I thought that's cool, you know, to be able to be at home and have your symptoms managed and stay comfortable and have everybody there and kind of do things on your own terms. That's awesome. And so I applied for a job with that hospice shortly afterwards. And then I was there for 12 years the first time until I got real good and burned out. And then I left for a bit, and then I came back for a little bit, and now I still work. I work hospice, but I work in a different capacity now, one that just fits into my life better.
Well, thank you. I mean, there's a couple of things there. One is, I mean, ultimately, you know, you saw your mom. That's one thing. You assisted her, and I mean, it was just, I mean, she was more independent, I guess, until that happened. So it's a little different. So had someone been there with her, you know, maybe it would have been different. But again, it is what it is. It happened, right?
Right.
But in the event of like the story you just shared now, I mean, I think that's what it is. I mean, you're right. There is hospice facilities. Some people actually, you know, wind up there, and, you know, maybe they have no family or whatever, and it's better, you know, they have better treatment there. But now with home care and long-term care, you know, options, people can actually stay home. They get all the stuff, the tools. As a matter of fact, my dad, you know, when he was diagnosed again, cancer, terminal, they, you know, I had him home. We had the home care, you know, coming in, you know, he had an aide, he had his bed, he had all the tools that he mm-hmm. needed. It was, you know, the nurses came in, did his patches and all stuff. He was in peace. I mean, literally he was comfortable until he went. I mean, even pain, I mean, there's not a lot of pain that he was at least, you know, displaying. Maybe internally I can, you know. Mm-hmm. But he was in the comfort zone, and slowly but surely, I mean, he tended to kind of just slowly lose his abilities, right? But mm-hmm. but towards the latter part of his life, I mean, I still remember him a couple of, you know, weeks before, and that was when he got hospitalized the last time and for pneumonia, but it was still good. I mean, a little forgetful, but he was in a zone where he didn't realize that what was happening. You know, I think that was a good thing because he wasn't stressed about it. Mm-hmm. And even the last day, you know, I saw him, he was still good and just, you know, in the hospital sleeping and relaxing until time's up. Right. And I appreciate the work because it does make life easier for people. And to your point, it's in their environment. They don't have to feel that they're out, you know, somewhere with strangers and not getting to have the access to their current life or their regular life, right? Mm-hmm. And so it gives them that feeling. Now, it does come with, I mean, for you, I mean, you talked about 12 years and you got burned out. I mean, it is a psychological piece. I mean, seeing people every day, day in, day out, that you're talking to and you know they're going, you know. I mean, when you don't know someone and you hear that dead is one thing. But when you know someone that you care for, that you see, that you get attached to, it becomes a problem. I mean, that's the thing. I always said this, the more family you have, the more stressful it's going to get because, you know, we all going to lose people. We're going to be the first ones going and they're going to lose us. But either way, it's going to be, I guess, hard on someone, right? Or a few people, right? And so the more you have in your entourage, the harder it gets. Now, obviously, in the type of work you do, it becomes routine. It becomes a little bit easier. You kind of, you know, not think about it. You do your routine. You do your best. You see the satisfaction in the family's eyes and in the patients. It makes a difference. But again, it's a great work because I have to say, if this was not out there available, I mean, a lot of people would be probably suffering more. Mm-hmm. Not having a very comfortable, you know, last days, if you want to call in this word, right? Mm-hmm. And so it is. I mean, talking about humane. I mean, it's really humane in a lot of ways. I mean, usually we refer humane to more animal stuff, but in the human, you know, kind. I mean, it feels nice. It feels good. I mean, to a degree. Now, of course, someone can say like, "Oh, are you talking about? You know, you don't know anything about." Again, I can say I've seen it in my own family. I've seen it. I lived it. But it's a transitional phase that, you know, any one of us that's not equipped is going to be very difficult to actually manage. But when you have a team that helps through that, even there's psychological stuff, you know, there's intervention, there's social work that can be, absolutely, you know, available, therapy, there's all kind of stuff. There's clergies that can, you know, or whatever denomination, you know, access, you can have that as well. I mean, we've had those, you know, opportunities as well. And so people can, whatever, you know, makes them comfortable, you get a whole work, you know, load. And by the way, it's funny you said 6 months or later, because, you know, in my experience, there have been cases where people went to hospice and came out of hospice. And I'm not sure if you know, where people are like, oh, they're ill, they're going to be gone. Mm-hmm. And then something happens, their body rejects whatever and kicks it in and mm-hmm. they're back and they're alive, you know, for much longer. So it is amazing. But I can tell you this, without that treatment, without the help, maybe things could have been worse. I don't know. We can never, you know, say anything for sure because, you know, it mm-hmm. didn't happen that way, right? But so thank you for sharing that. So now you got into this world and how do you personally deal with it? I mean, in terms of stress, because, you know, like I said, I mean, knowing someone is one mm-hmm. thing, but knowing a lot of people and seeing it every day, I mean, you know, people may put a facade, people may kind of get, you know, I guess thicker strength, you know, or like you put a little armor around you, like, you know, and you find mm-hmm. ways to actually just to come, you know, to just put that stuff away. But it's hidden. I mean, it's still in your subconscious, mm-hmm. still there, and it still just adds up and does, you know, the concept of burnout is very common in the field of nursing and your work mm-hmm. is probably higher. Mm-hmm. So how did you manage through that process? I mean, in your own way, and maybe what advice would you give to audiences or nurses out there? You know, actually, there's an advice opportunity for people that actually have people who have, you know, a terminal diagnosis, prognosis, you said, and maybe in hospice. Also, in the folks that are caring and the nurses that are working in that field, what would be some of the advice to kind of cope and really mitigate some of the impact?
Yeah. Great, great questions. So, well, first let me tell you to not do what I did in the beginning. So let me be your cautionary tale. When I first got started, I loved it. I learned so much. It was, I mean, I just really, it really like ignited a passion in me for nursing like I had never had. And so when that happens though, you know, when we're so into something, it's very easy for that to take over, especially if you have a personality like mine. I'm kind of all, you know, I'm all or nothing. And so I was the one who wanted to be on call for my patients all the time, you know, because I knew them and they loved me and I loved them. And it was, I had awful boundaries. And so they had my personal number. They would call me in the middle of the night and I'd be like, sure, I'll be on my way. You know, in the meantime, I had a husband and six kids at home, and I would just always be there for everybody. And it was something that was, you know, kind of frowned upon by my employer, you know, hey, we need to, you know, it needs to be the people who are on call. But the reality was it worked out pretty well for everybody, because then the on call, you know, the people who were on call, they didn't have to deal with my people because I was taking care of it. And so it was a slippery slope. And it took me a long time to realize that, hey, like I can still be a good nurse. I can still be caring, and I can be the one who does most of their stuff, you know, but if there is something that comes up after hours or, you know, on a time when I'm off, like they're going to be okay. I work with a great team of people. I don't have to be, you know, the one. And so definitely I would, you know, in any situation like that, you know, utilize your team. And if you're somebody who's a caregiver at home, you know, maybe, and it's a family member or a friend that you're caring for, you know, if there are other people that you're able to bring in and have them help with things, you know, if you have people saying, hey, you know, let me know if you need anything, take them up on that. And most of the time when people say it, they mean it, but a lot of times they have no idea what to do. And, you know, having like some specific things, you know, hey, could you come over and sit for an hour so that I can, you know, shower without worrying about somebody falling, or so that I can run to the grocery store and feel okay with it, or maybe go for a walk by myself, you know, being very specific about those kind of things, because people who haven't been there don't know the kind of things that you might be needing. And, you know, just figuring out those little pockets of time. And it may be, you know, 1 to 5 minutes at a time is all you can come up with, but ways to be able to take care of yourself, to, you know, take a couple of deep breaths and maybe go sit outside on the porch for a couple of minutes and just be there in nature and hear and see and smell those kind of things. You know, that's something that can be huge. In terms of, you know, overall, how do you keep from getting so overwhelmed? You know, how can you help avoid burnout? You know, part of that is just really recognizing those signs in yourself and knowing, hey, here's things that I need to be doing that I know help to take care of me. And, you know, my whole approach with self-care and stress relief is that it really needs to be personalized to, you know, to the individual and to the stage of life, you know, because the things that I do now that I enjoy and that really rejuvenate me, you know, those may be different than the things that I did a decade ago. You know, my life is different now. And so really taking that time to check in with ourselves and figure out like, where do I need to say no? Where do I maybe need to dial some things back so that I can take care of myself so that I don't have that overwhelmed feeling?
Well, thank you. So here's the thing. I mean, first of all, you said you had a family and, you know, kids and working and that stuff. I have to say, I mean, that's a lot to juggle. I mean, it's big. And I mean, that's always going to be the question, work and life balance. I mean, that's a big discussion in every environment when it comes to work, right? And unfortunately, in this world, we have to work. So how do you do it? It's a very, and then when you work in a role that is more, I guess, impactful, such as yours, and deal with some higher stress levels, if you think about it. And then you had your personal, I guess, personality where you wanted to be in person at all times. And by the way, I think a lot of people, they do take that. And by the way, that's when I said earlier about how I, when I'm experienced with nurses that took care of the care managers, they really become part of the family. I mean, they mm-hmm. they advocate, they strong, you know, right. they really actually push and they want things and they involve, they know the details. So they become part of it. And I think I can understand, you know, where you were, because you know them better than most. And, you know, this is not going to be like just a case, because when you go to, for example, the hospital, I mean, nurses switch shifts and, you know, right. unless you, and by the way, even for me, when my mom was in the hospital, you know, I was happy to see the same nurse over and over, because mm-hmm. they already knew everything. You know, now you right. get someone for like one shift and it kind of like you have to repeat everything. They have to understand everything, and it becomes mm-hmm. a little bit more challenge for them and you. And so yes, it's very easy when someone is really there. They know everything. This is like having a primary doctor, right? You don't want to change doctors because they know everything about you. You know, if you have a headache, they know probably why the reason is. But you go to somewhere else, you got to give them the whole story again. They got to yeah. figure you out. It's a pain. So I get it, but it does have a toll. Now, here's the thing. Why is it that, being in general, a struggle, you know, to really put yourself first in your function? And I think in a lot of ways, anybody that's a service provider, technically, sometimes they might be, you know, neglecting themselves. I mean, are there any studies, anything that you've read that can actually maybe highlight that, or maybe explain some of that, you know, feeling? Is it a psychological need, or is it just like, you know, it just the work ethics, you know, you love it, you do it, and you just forget about yourself because you don't want to think? I mean, again, just curious, because mm-hmm. you've managed, I mean, you wrote the book and now you do the whole, and we're going to go into the becoming method, but let's talk about just that. I mean, because that's a big question, I think, that people will have. Why, you know, you are not really taking care of yourself and taking care of everybody else, and you don't realize that.
Mm-hmm. Well, so yes, I think to all of those things that you just asked. So it okay. is for some people, it is more pronounced than others. You know, some of us are just really wired that way. Mm-hmm. You know, we're helpers, we're givers, but there are a lot of studies, and I'm honestly not great with studies, so I can't quote them, but I've read some that talk about we have that innate need to be in community, to help each other, because that's how we survived. You know, I mean, we were in groups of people. We weren't just on our own all the time. And so we're wired to want to be able to help others and to need to do that. And I think that's so, it's so important to do that and to change our view of self-care. And, you know, that doesn't mean taking care of me doesn't mean that I'm neglecting everybody else. It doesn't mean that I'm, you know, thinking more highly of myself than others and just, you know, well, they can fend for themselves. What it does mean is I know the things that I need to do that are going to make me feel my best, that are going to help me to be able to have the capacity to care for other people. And that's, I think that's one of the biggest challenges that in the people that I work with, is that, you know, they feel like it's selfish, or that they don't have time for self-care, or they don't really know where to start. Because those are, it's just, we're as humans now, you know, I mean, there is a lot of focus on helping each other out. And I think that was one thing that happened from COVID was, you know, we did feel a little more like, hey, we are all in this together. But there's also that need to recognize that I need to take care of myself a bit too. And so it's changing that mindset from, you know, give, and maybe if there's something left at the end of the day, then I'll, you know, take care of myself a little bit. And instead realizing that I've got to start here so that I have the, you know, the energy and the bandwidth to take care of all these people that I do care about, whether that be professionally or personally.
Well, thank you. And so there's one thing though. I mean, signals. I mean, do people see the signals? I mean, because I think if you're too busy, you might not even see that you are getting
right.
overwhelmed, and you might react differently. You might start seeing different, you know, attitudes and changes, but you may not recognize that it's related to that, which is basically denial that comes out in everybody's work. I mean, no one wants to admit that they are wrong or they're overdoing things, because, you know, it's like no, I got this. I got this. I think it's just our human nature. We always try, our ego gets in place there, but it's not really a good thing. But are there signals that we should look and other, you know, were, you know, folks in the nursing space and especially in hospice, you know, work, can they, is there something that to really like maybe point to is that you can guide them? Like, hey, listen, if you start seeing this, that, the other, you know, I think it's time for you to kind of push back and just take a whole, you know, break a little bit and see what's up, because you might be going into a mood. Because sometimes if you get too much burnout, it might be difficult to come back. It might be stressful enough. It can cause headache. I mean, you know, headache for you in terms of health. I mean, somebody can get sick, you know, through that stuff. Stress can be also tremendous and can have physical, you know, ramifications. So what are some of the things that you can, you know, share in terms of signals that people should look for and when to really stop? I mean, because, you know, it may not be as obvious as it sounds.
Right. And absolutely. Yes, there are signals, and you're right. A lot of times we don't notice them because it's very easy to attribute them to something else. And, or it's also very easy to just completely miss them because our lives are so busy and so noisy that we don't take time to, you know, sit down and think, how am I really feeling right now? You know, how do I feel physically? You know, how's that been going? How have I been sleeping? How do I feel emotionally, spiritually? You know, we don't do a lot of reflection with those type of things. We just go from one thing to the next and we just keep on keeping on. But if we do take a little bit of time to, you know, to just really check in with ourselves, and it doesn't have to be, you know, a big long retreat, but it is just a little, you know, like, how am I really doing? You know, when you ask somebody, hey, how you doing? Oh, you know, I'm good. I'm busy, but good. You know, everything's good. Or, you know, things have been kind of stressful, but it's pretty good. How about you? Or every now and then you do get the person who you're like, oh, why did I ask? Because you hear like everything, you know, I had a hangnail this morning and the laundry, you know, my dryer shut off. And, you know, so it's kind of one extreme or the other. There's not a lot of real, how am I? Let me really tell you. But we need to do that with ourselves, because when we're headed for burnout, when we're, you know, kind of dancing there on the edge, our body gives us signals. You know, we'll not sleep very well, or we want to sleep too much. I get both of those. And, you know, maybe we'll have some stomach issues going on. Things aren't working like they used to. Headaches. That's another one that, you know, we can only handle so much, and we may be piling things on and thinking, hey, I've got this, but eventually our body's going to say, nope, you sure don't. And we'll get those signals and we'll continue to get them, and we'll either pay attention or they just get a little louder. And when that happens, then yes, sometimes there are really, you know, serious consequences from that. You know, I mean, you can be looking at heart trouble, or just our body's just kind of shut down a bit. So when we're not paying attention to those signs, then we're going to have to pay attention eventually. But not only that, but, you know, in terms of, aside from the physical things, you know, maybe you just like a job that you used to love, you just really don't anymore. You know, you find yourself dreading going to work, and maybe it's you can't do things as quickly or as well as you used to. You know, you're making some mistakes with things, and you think, well, you know, I'm getting a little older, or things are busy. You know, a lot of it is probably you're just stressed out, and that's your way of kind of your body's way of giving out a little bit. Also, if you find that you either are much more emotional or much less emotional, you know, so maybe everything just really gets you anxious or gets you kind of tearful, or especially in terms of, you know, if you're talking about healthcare type things, if normally you're somebody who does really feel things and you find that, you know, it's just, hey, it's just same old, you know, I mean, people die. That's what happens. It's, you know, you just move on. That's not the way that most of us want to be. You know, it's yes, people do die and we do have to move on. But I had a situation the other day. I was at an assisted living and it was one of our patients who had passed away suddenly. And so, I mean, now obviously we knew that, I mean, you know, the patient had a terminal diagnosis. And so we knew that, you know, at some point that they were going to pass, but it wasn't expected then, you know, everything, something was just like a little off the day before, but no real indication that, you know, that they were getting ready to die. And I talked with the director there at the assisted living and she's like, you know, I just didn't know. And she was somebody that, you know, she really cared for this patient a lot. And she said, you know, I hate the way that I feel right now. I just feel so, you know, I feel so sad. And I said, but, you know, don't you, you know, wouldn't you want, if this was your family member, wouldn't you want somebody caring for them that felt the way that you feel right now? You know, I mean, we don't need to be so professional and so closed off that we don't feel that human, you know, we connect with people. And there's some people that we connect with more quickly and more deeply than others. And that's, I mean, that's part of the beauty of being human. And so she was like, you know, yeah, I do. And I said, you know, my goal has always been to, you know, because there's patients that I have been really close to and some that I know that I've been like too close to. And I'm like, please, please, please do not let the family be comforting me when this patient dies. I've really worried about that. I'm like, I don't want to be like a hysterical mess and the family being like, it's okay, Jenny, it'll be okay. And thankfully that hasn't happened, but I did actually work with an aide one time that it was like that when I went to a death, and it was awful. It was bad. But I never want to not care. You know, if I get to a point where I'm like, okay, whatever, it's another one, then I'm done. You know, I don't cry at every death, but I feel something. Even if it's somebody that, you know, I work on call now. So most of the time I don't really see the patients that, you know, I don't see them often. So if I'm going to a death visit, it may be the first time that I've ever seen them. But I still feel something, you know, for their family and just for them. And it's a human life and it's a loss to somebody. And so, I think it's important to be able to feel those things, but also to have ways that you're able to move beyond that, you know, because if I carried all of that with me from everybody that I've lost, that would be a lot.
Well, thank you, Jenny. And you know, it's, you know, what you're talking about is very big. And I think, you know, this is my personal opinion. I think your work, we should have more services available to you as nurses out there to assist with these things. You know, like, I haven't seen this where in hospitals or in healthcare settings where they have, for example, access to therapy or psychology or psychiatry would work, you know, for the employers. I mean, the employees, like, you know, hey, how you doing? How you coping? I mean, maybe you should have a check monthly on things like, you know, just, you know, you get a session, a free session that's given to you so you can kind of like just speak your mind and get it out. I mean, because these folks are experts, they can get it out of you, right? Mm-hmm. But I don't think that's the case. And so people work until, as you point, you know, when the body is rejecting everything or their behavior is different, or maybe they're just numb to everything. It's like, okay, now that and then there's no more emotions. So you know, to your point, that's those are clear signals that something is off. You're not passionate mm-hmm. anymore. You're just going through the emotions. And then ultimately that's not the way you want to be as a human in that particular service, right? Because you're just not feeling it. But I love what you said. I mean, you're right. You know, no matter how connected or disconnected, there's some sort of level of, you know, you feel the emotions of others and you can feel the energy and things like that. And it does hurt when you see someone that you've cared, you know, for a minute. I mean, people are attached to others by default. I mean, we spend a couple of days with someone and they become friends, and now you feel some sort of an obligation, whether you like it or not, it's there, right? And if they're gone, and the only time you don't feel much of it is the further you're away from anyone, the least the impact is. The more closer you're with someone, it's going to be heavier. And so, and your work is like really there. I mean, now on call is a little different, but when you are in the facility, when you're actually constantly visiting and hearing stories and stuff, it becomes part of your own. I've always asked, even I one time I asked, you know, a psychiatrist about how do you do it? I mean, because really, I mean, you hear all these stories and all these people are confessing and talking to you about their problems. Shouldn't that take a toll on you? I mean, but, you know, they have the way to deal with that. But in your case, you know, I think I hope that maybe people out there start thinking about adding that service, you know, as available, not just as when needed, as basically a routine check. Hey, listen, how you doing? You know, just go in and check with people. And maybe people would be reluctant in having that, you know, open and just, I'm just going to see my psychology today, you know, I'll get some therapy session. To me, I don't see a problem with it. If someone is going to be able to get me, like, you know, aligned, I mean, it's like having a chiropractor for the mind, you know, right. let's align, yes. you know, get your spirit. Let's get adjusted, right? You know, and be better, because then I can do more. To your point, if you get to the point where it's too late, you know, you might just not like what you do anymore. And by the way, you can make mistakes at that point too, which could be critical. And I don't think facilities and healthcare systems will like people making mistakes anyways, because that's lawsuits that are in, you know, that could happen and things like that. So financially, it's not a good thing, or reputation can be harmed, you know. I mean, media gets a, you know, hand of something like that, forget about it. It's like, hey, we got them, right? So we don't want that. But maybe, I think, again, this is just my wish, and hopefully, you know, I'm sure there's some places where it is, but it's not global. I haven't seen it as a common practice where everybody that has a team, and you mentioned COVID and how you felt that we got come together in unit. But, you know, talking about nurses in that time, I mean, any healthcare, you know, provider, everybody was overwhelmed. I mean, there was nonstop. Mm-hmm. It's like, and that's the other thing. I think nurses work a lot more today than they should. Don't get me wrong, but when you do 12-hour shifts, I mean, you know, in some systems it's 12 hours, 3 days, whatever, 4 days a week. Yeah, to me, that's a lot of hours, you know, of working. I mean, you know, I think 8 hours is good, especially the work you do. Again, I'm not the expert, but, you know, I just don't see it, you know, that it gives. And I've seen people, like, you know, they work, they love it. Yeah, when you have the energy, you're still young, you might be able to do it. But people also are different ages, are going to get different feeling about it, and it's going to take a different toll on them. So, all right, so thank you. So now let's quickly, you know, switch gears to your book, and then we'll talk about the method, all right? Your unique method. So the book itself, you wrote that, you know, kind of like a guide. What is the purpose of it, and how can people benefit from it, and some highlights?
Thank you so much. Just to touch a little bit on what you just said, because I don't want to forget that, and I think it is so important about the you know, the therapy and being able to decompress and stuff. You know, and most employers do have, like, the, you know, the EAP, the Employee Assistance Program, where you can get, like, 3 sessions, you know, over a year, or maybe that's even a lifetime. I don't know, but I don't think that's really taken advantage of, and that's something that I would love to. I'm not a psychologist, but I do coach people around stress relief and self-care, and I think so much of it is that being able to have somebody that you can be open and honest with, and get some, you know, hey, well, what about, you know, what if you tried something different? What might that look like? And so that's something that I want to do more of, and get in front of people where it can be a more proactive type thing, instead of, you know, just waiting till people are burned out and then hiring more people that then are going to get burned out. So I love that. I think we're on the same track there with that. In terms of my book, yeah, so it's a short book. I did it that way for a couple of reasons. One, because I can't focus for that long. And two, because the people who really need it, you know, I mean, it's this big, you know, people who really need it aren't going to sit down and read a 300-page book about taking care of yourself. And so it goes into my story, but also it's just very practical, you know, reasons why, you know, why we need to practice self-care, what that really looks like. And it's not just spa days and bubble baths, but, and then some, you know, just some very practical things that here's things that you can do, kind of a menu of options, just to get the juices flowing a little bit, and help people understand, you know, that anything can be self-care if it's something that really, you know, nourishes you and helps you feel like your best self. So it's an easy read. You know, you can read it all at once in probably 2 hours. And if you're, you know, actually working through the exercises and stuff, then of course it'll take a little longer, or you can jump around and do, you know, bits and pieces of things as it fits into your life.
Well, I love the concept. To your point, you know, you can read a full, you know, series of books about things, but sometimes you just need, you know, some people actually don't need a lot. They just need the guidelines, the you know, this is to hit the marks, right? I want this, step one, step two, step three. Let's see how, you know, and you can, it's like a quick guide reference that can help you, you know, manage, right? And so I like the concept that it's smaller, you know, not extensive, but it's really to the point and it can make a difference. So thank you for that. And, you know, congrats on that one. I mean, hopefully there will be more coming in the works.
I think there will.
There you go. So yeah, kind of psychic. No, I'm just kidding. but you know, but again, I can see that you already have the passion. And once you do the first one, I mean, it's just a natural thing that you're going to do a sequel, a secondary book,
right?
Maybe more advanced one, right? And so, and now you might even put a whole novel together. Who knows, right?
You know, thought about that. So we'll see.
There you go. There you go. Again. I'm just kidding. Just been doing this long enough, right? All right. So now let's talk about the becoming method. I mean, you know, what does becoming method mean? I mean, what is that? I mean, it sounds interesting and intriguing. So let's share that with people.
Sure. So when I first started my coaching practice, I named it Becoming Your Best with Jenny Lytle RN. And so that was because I believe that we're all just becoming, you know, we're never going to arrive. We're never, you know, I'm never going to be like, okay, well, I'm done now. You know, I've accomplished everything I wanted to. I'm, you know, I'm the best version of me. Instead, it's a process. And so that is, I want to be becoming until the day I die. And so when I was looking at things in terms of, you know, trying to put together a framework for being able to help people through, you know, okay, hey, I'm like way over here and I want to be over here. How's that going to happen? For me, when I was going through my own burnout journey, it was, you know, it was about a year of, it was a lot of do. And so I took the nursing process, which is a framework that, you know, that we do things with, and then kind of combined that with some of the other things that I had done. And so, and came up with the becoming method, which is, I mean, each letter stands for something. So, you know, B is baseline. And so that's where are you starting? Because if you're going to go somewhere, you got to know where you're starting from to begin with. And then each letter means something different. And it's all about really being able to just step by step personalize
Oh, Jenny,
that you've had froze. In the past.
I'm sorry, you kind of froze.
Oh, yeah, I just saw it said I'm unstable.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, am I good?
You're good. So you're talking about like every letter meant something. We did the B.
Yes. Yeah. And so the rest is really just focusing on, you know, so they all go down into specific things. So it's looking at areas maybe where you've excelled before or things that matter most to you. And it's thinking about the things that we just don't think about. And maybe we do in terms of our work or our job situations, but not as our life as a whole. And being able to then have that as we work through it and get clear on what is it that matters most to me and where am I fitting those kind of things in. So it's just a framework for that being able to make sense and just kind of build on each other and then figuring out, okay, so I've got this. Now, where is it that I want to go and what's missing? How am I going to get there? So that's kind of the short version, but it's just a way for people to be able to get what they want and where they want to go more quickly and easily than I did.
Well, again, I mean, you're an expert. I mean, 30 plus years doing what you do and you understand this well. I mean, surely your advice and your work is going to be helpful to a lot. I mean, It takes 10 years to get a PhD. That's three PhDs in real practice, right? So again, I'm just you know, throwing that, because people sometimes they don't realize. I mean, and real practice, you know, in life is probably more than any PhD out there. Although PhDs actually, they do a lot of work, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
But when you take that into 10 years full practice, mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's a lot more, you know, we can multiply that multiple times, you know, but really it's a source. And so this is something that you do now, you help people, you know, yes. kind of figure it out. Mm-hmm. Now, how can people actually work with you and can, like, you know, join the Becoming Method? And how does that work? I mean, do they sign up for it? Is it a program? Is it a couple months? Is it a year? How does that work?
Yeah. So I do just, you know, if somebody's like, hey, I don't know about all that, you know, I've just got a few things that I want to work on. I do some one-on-one coaching, you know, and have shorter things for that. I am actually finishing up. I'm kind of revamping. I did have an 8-week program that I did as far as the Becoming Method and being able to really, you know, figure out, hey, what is going to work best for me in terms of self-care and stress relief. And so I'm doing some tweaks on that a little bit, but it'll be back up and going shortly. And then I've just recently launched the Nurses Break Room, which is it's a membership community that is a way for people to be able to learn, you know, from me, from each other, to just be in community. It's kind of like social media without the noise of social media. And so that's something that is just getting off the ground as well. And but everybody can find out about all of those things. And, you know, if you're somebody that just wants to talk things over, we can, you know, book a free discovery call. And that's all available on my website at jennylytle.com.
All right. Perfect. Well, so we will definitely have that in the description show so people can connect with you. All right. Well, listen, I mean, I think we're just about the hour here and we've covered quite a bit. And, you know, I really appreciate the time and, you know, all the stuff, the nuggets that you shared, because, you know, I think your message can resonate well with the nursing, you know, people and the healthcare in general. But I think it can be also expanded to everybody, because burnout is experienced across all different fields. I don't care what you do. If you're doing something that is intense or whatever, there's a burnout. We can burn out just by doing family stuff. So imagine
Absolutely.
When you had yes. everything. I mean, if you have kids, you can burn out. But burnout at work is not, you know, in the workplace is huge. And I just don't think there's enough work that's being done. And to your point, I mean, even for the therapy, I mean, yeah, you have access to these things. I've had them also in corporate. Nobody really takes them. But in fields and specific fields that have intense caring and intense emotions, I think that should be mandated, not just an option. Mm-hmm. And that's just my opinion. Mm-hmm. Hopefully, you know, some companies, you know, will see that as a, hey, this is really a good idea. Let's do it. You know, mm-hmm. and, you know, so, hey, folks, if you're watching and listening, maybe it's something you can add as a benefit to your crew and make them to the next level. It's only going to benefit you and them, you know, I mean, them and you, if we take it in the right order.
Absolutely. Right. Oh, and you know what? I don't think I said this. I'm sorry. While I was talking about stuff, your listeners can also grab a free digital copy of my book on my website. So there's,
you know, started with that. I'm just kidding. That's good. Free is good. Everybody wants it.
Exactly.
That, right?
Exactly. I mean, it's available in all the forms on Amazon, but including Audible, but you can get a free digital copy on my website. So,
well, listen, folks, I mean, you can't get better than that. I mean, yeah, we get a hard copy. It's always a good thing to have a collection, but I mean, certainly if you want to just browse through and read and get stuff, it's available. Why not? All right. So that's good. All right. Well, so Jenny, what are some of the three top, I guess, pieces of advice that you will leave our audiences with today?
Ooh, that's good. Right. Okay. So
take your time. It's all good.
So I would say the first one is, you know, just think about your feelings about stress relief and self-care. And, you know, and if you have that kind of, I don't have time for that, or, you know, oh, I don't know, that feels kind of selfish, then, you know, I challenge you to rethink that and think about the people who are counting on you and how they would be impacted if you're not here, if you're not able to, you know, to help them. So, so there's that one. And then the other one is, you know, take a little bit of time to just breathe. If you're not sure where to start, you know, just taking a deep breath and blowing it out, you know, and just, we, I mean, yes, obviously we all breathe, but But usually it's, you know, it's these short, shallow breaths. It's kind of a, you know, it's a very automatic thing. But when we slow that down, when we take deeper breaths, you know, when we inhale and then we exhale, that really does reset some things for us, you know, biochemically. And then I would say the other one is think of things that you're grateful for. You know, there's always stuff out there that we want, you know, we want the newest, best things. We look at other people, especially on social media. It's so easy to compare ourselves to things, you know, to the things that they have or the things that people are doing. But when we just get really specific on all of our blessings, all of the things that we're grateful for, you know, doing that practice at least once a day, but, you know, in the morning and of an evening, if you can fit that in, and just, you know, just look around and think of, you know, like right now, I mean, the sun is shining and it's beautiful and I've got air conditioning and that's beautiful too.
But it is, trust me. And when it goes away in the heat, you will feel the difference a lot.
Absolutely. You know, and the fact that we're able to have these awesome conversations and meet people that we never would have met before, you know, it's just things like that are amazing. And when we focus on those and really, you know, think about it, then we start looking for more things that are going right.
Well, thank you. So, you know, you talked about being grateful, and it's something hit, you know, in my mind, especially in the work you do, because I've seen this, I've heard this. Maybe I'll ask you direct, because you probably have the best answer to this. I did hear that people, when they are end of life, they have regrets. Mm-hmm. You know, in your expertise and your experience, what would be some of the common regrets that people have mentioned in that position? Because I think people should hear that part, you know, from someone who's literally been there with a lot of people that have been to there. And because I think that would help people live their lives in a different way today.
Mm-hmm. One of the biggest ones is working too much. Worrying too much about, you know, all of the stuff and not enough about the people. Worrying about what other people think. And, you know, as a side note to that, you know, we always worry about what people are thinking of us when we, you know, when we do something or when we don't do something, you know, what will they think? Honestly, they're not going to think anything. They're too busy worrying about what people are thinking of them. You know, most of the time we're not looking at what other people are doing. I mean, we may briefly, you know, and be like, oh, well, that was kind of weird, but it's not, you know, not enough for it to really need to change our lives. So, you know, relationships are definitely a top one, you know, wanting to do more things that, that we're aligned with, the things that we want to do that maybe we hold ourselves back from doing for one reason or another. That's a big one. And just, playing small, you know, being afraid of doing the things that maybe we feel like we're called to do, but we're kind of afraid to do. And also being afraid of just being open and honest about who we are. And, you know, when we're able to find people that we can really open up to and share the things that are in our hearts and on our minds, you know, that's something that's impactful. We all need to feel connected.
Well, thank you. I was hoping for one item. I mean, you gave us a whole list of things that we shouldn't be. These are all the don'ts, folks, you know, or the don'ts that will get us to what would be the do's, right?
Right.
I mean, really.
And you know, I think one of the top ones is, and this is not really so much from the people themselves saying it, but because I've talked to so many people, is when you feel like something isn't right, like listen to yourself. You know, and it doesn't matter what a doctor says. And I'm all for, you know, I have a lot of respect for doctors, but if you know, hey, this is not normal for me, then get a second opinion, get a third opinion if that's what you need to get. And sometimes, yes, sometimes we can get a little hypochondriacish, but really, if you know yourself and you know your body and you know that something's not right, pay attention to that and don't just put it off.
Well, thank you. And again, folks, this is really from the source. I mean, I think the list is if you just pull in bullets, it should be your go-to, because I think we all should benefit from that. We should all apply that and live with that code. I mean, I think that's a good code to live with, because this way, at least when you get to the point where you're departing, you've done everything right. You've done everything you want. And really, to your point, you die, people will forget about you. Maybe a couple of people will remember you. Mm-hmm. The rest, you know, you just be a memory, or maybe like, oh, I think I remember that that dude. Yeah, that's about it. You know, so do it for you. Do it for your immediate loved ones, and that's all. And yes, I mean, I think we spend a lot of time caring about what people think, what should be done, and then all this peer pressure business and how society wants you to live. And I admire some people. Actually, they just do whatever it takes. I mean, we talk about bucket lists all the time. People want to do their stuff towards the latter part of life. And frankly, and you can relate to this. I mean, if you keep postponing things, you don't know how your health is going to play. And once mm-hmm. your health goes, or you're in a terminal format, you might not be able to do the thing. Like in the movies, they can show like, I got a terminal illness, so let me go and do my trips. You might not be able to do the trips, folks. And as sadly as it sounds, your body is not going to be the same, you know, when, you know, listen, you have no problems and you still have aches. Just aging can be a piece of that. Imagine, you know, things that you want to climb a mountain, you're not going to do it if you're 90 and or 70 or whatever with some major illness, right? Can't mm-hmm. breathe oxygen, you can't go into the mountain, right? So there's a lot of stuff that you have to think about. You know, even traveling could be a problem, right? You know, getting a vehicle could be a problem, all the stuff. So enjoy life for what it's worth. Do it right. Don't hurt anyone, you know. Do goodness in this world and do everything else. I think, you know, those practices will take you a long way and you'll have a very fulfilled life. And I think we should all, you know, aspire to having that, because at the end of the day, we're all going to go one day, and that's the fact of life. Well, let's do it right. So thank you so much, Jenny, for sharing that, because, you know, I mean, I couldn't help myself. I mean, I should have asked it before, but, you know, we got carried on in the whole topic. But then when you said grateful, I'm like, wait a minute, you know, I did have something about regret, and, in you know, especially mm-hmm. for end of life, because it's a huge thing. I mean, people just, they want more time to do things that right. they haven't done before. Mm-hmm. And there's not enough time. I mean, that's the other time is maybe an illusion. It's limited. It's the commodity that we don't get enough of. And people sometimes don't respect the time, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, oh, it's just, I'm just going to kill time. No, you don't kill time. Time is killing you. You know, I mean, look, think about it, right?
Right.
We hear that, so, oh, I'm just killing time. No, you're not killing time. Yeah, right. Time is killing you, because that's the mm-hmm. time that you're not, enjoy it, learn something, do something, get an activity, right. take care of your body. I mean, a lot of things. Well, Jenny, thank you so much. I mean, I know I already asked you for your last, you know, points, you know, and bullets. So we're past that point. So I want to thank you for being with us and really bringing your knowledge and skills and expertise to our audiences here. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate it. And I think you're one of the few people who talks maybe a little faster than I do even.
And I've been told that, but as long as you can, you know, capture me, it's all good.
I got it. Yeah. Awesome. Thank you.
They don't call me Hurricane. They don't call me Hurricane for nothing.
Exactly. Thank you.
That's fun. That's good. Well, listen, folks, I hope you had fun with us today. I mean, it's a lot of stuff. It is a powerful discussion today, you know, that we had. And, you know, obviously Jenny is an expert in this world. And yes, do check out her site, do check out her work. And if you think you need help, you know, definitely check out the Becoming Method and, you know, connect with her, see what it does for you, because I think we all need work and help. And, you know, nobody is beyond help here. So I can tell you that much. Everybody can use some sort of help one way or the other. We do some of it through this work of podcasts and shows, but really sometimes this is just giving you the headlines. You want to get into the deep dive with someone such as Jenny, so do that. That being said, I'm Hurricane H. We'll be talking soon in the day in the show topic. Bye for now.